Hey, everyone. It is episode 117 of the Blind Bargains cast. That is amazing. Triple digits always seem to freak me out. There is so much things to talk about in the world of Google and Android.
You realize you're stuck on triple digits for the next 882 shows.
Oh, okay. Well, then let me freak out
if we
about
make it
shows
that far.
Before sesquicentennial.
If we get to the four digits, I think Steve Nutt and some others are going to beat us to that. I don't know. Who knows? And
our place is definitely on a roll. Yeah,
we're talking about the iPhone 27. And
this is true.
Hey, no, I think we're moving away from Apple for a week.
How did that happen?
Wow.
Oh, yes, that's because Sundar Pichai has a bunch of stuff to tell us about from the Google event.
Wait. Don't turn it off, though, if you're thinking, I don't have Android. I'm just going to fast forward. No, there's a lot more, a lot of Google Home type stuff. Some
of that connects to Spotify, even a mention of Sonos. And
some other stuff as well. So, yeah, so a very feature-filled presser that they did. On the day that we recorded this past Wednesday, but a lot of other things as well. So we're going to try. We'll make it interesting to as many people as possible. And there's other news as well. And of course, last word and sound
there's
off.
There's iOS 11.02 and a new version of WatchOS.
There you go.
There, see? We covered it. We're totally there.
And a tip that I don't know what will be yet. But maybe by the time we get there, I will figure it out. So we shall
and
see.
And last word and sound off.
I said that.
So much more. Oh, yeah, you did. Oh,
I already said that. I already said that.
True. Okay. Well, should we just get into the news thing?
If you only take one survey this year.
Yeah. So the WebAIM survey is out and it is ready for you to take.
There is
some fascinating choices still in there, like Talks and Mobile Speak, which is amazing.
Yeah, WindowEyes is still there and Mobile Speak is still there and Supernova is not.
I don't understand that.
And it always seems like one screen reader gets left out. But anyway, there is an other choice. And this is the survey for all screen reader surveys. And, you know, it's actually used by a lot of people. The data ends up being public. And it ends up getting used by a lot of companies that try to figure out what should we work on first for accessibility. So it's really good for you to register your preferences, whether it's Windows or Mac or Android or iPhone or even down to web browsers and things like that. It doesn't take that long. I did it already. I'm sure Joe will do it like the day before it's due, November 1st.
Probably. Yeah. It's just a college all
just
over
do
again.
Do it now. Don't. You'll forget. If you wait, you'll forget. Yeah. And this is actually one survey that you don't get paid for, but is absolutely worth doing. And of course, you can browse the previous results.
The four major companies cited this at CSUN to me personally as something that they looked at for determining development. There were three that I know of from ACB that mentioned it to us. So there are companies that directly look at this, which is both good and bad because there's a significant part of our population that isn't aware of the survey.
That's true.
Or doesn't take surveys or isn't necessarily very web adapt. So
in certain screen readers, the last one, I think WindowEyes and ZoomText got a pretty big bump because they promoted the hell of it on their list.
They sure did.
And that perhaps bumped them a little higher than some might think they deserved. Heck, maybe it raised their sale price. I don't know.
that's entirely possible. It certainly raised awareness one way or another.
But definitely fill it out. That's the only way you will be represented and we've definitely seen some trends over time. MVDA has pretty much gone up every single time. We will see if that continues, if JAWS remains the number one screen reader for Windows at least. But anyway, we've linked to that from our show notes and on Blind Bargain. So definitely go ahead and do that. Like I said, if you do one survey this year, this is the one to do. And it's very simple. Just
possibly Narrator might make it up that list of screen readers used
it
by
could.
A lot of us.
I've used it a lot
area.
More.
I would say so. And that will continue in the fall creators update. I was very, very, very thrilled to be offered the opportunity to come back on Main Menu and discuss Windows accessibility with the Narrator team that will be airing on ACB Main Menu very, very soon. If it is actually up by showtime, I'll have it in the show notes. If not, I'll put it in next week's episode. It was mentioned on that podcast about Satya Nadella's new book and about how disability directly impacted him and how it comes down into Microsoft as a whole from the top down. This blog post from Jenny Leigh Fleury from the accessibility blog over at Microsoft talks about that book and how a disabled child is what really drove Satya to add inclusion across all parts of Microsoft. His book, by the way, if you aren't real wanting to read it in, say, Audible or something else, is available on Bookshare.
Hey.
So you can read it there. And it's a very interesting read if you have an opportunity. This blog post goes into some of that. There are some crazy things that are happening on Narrator. And there's already what's called Redstone 4, which is the next version. So not Fall Creators Update, but year's Spring Update. And one of the new features that you'll be able to do is throw Narrator voice over to another sound card, like a sound chip on headphones or something like that. So more mainstream features coming to Narrator as this is shaping up to be something amazing going forward for what's built
into Windows. And more features that, you know, have been in other screen readers for a while in a lot of cases, but Narrator is picking up now on a lot more of the nuanced features. That is one, you know, that's been in NVDA and JAWS for a while, but, you know, it really comes in handy. And when, you know, to be able to move that around, you know, it certainly helps audio people for recording, but this in a lot of different situations, if, you know, if you want to do a party, you don't want your narrator coming through the speakers. You want your music coming through the speakers, and you can, of course, do that if you have separate sound cards and things like that. So really helps out, and we'll definitely be following more of Narrator as it comes out.
And as we talk about the future, several people, Ray Wonder and others, sent us this article that Marco over at Firefox has written about rethinking the screen reader and rethinking web browsers. And basically, it's a big, long article, which is awesome, by the way, about virtual buffers. And maybe buffers can go away at some point down the line. I responded to this when other people said it to me as long as the future of web apps involve JAWS, I don't think that's going to change. I think the buffer has a lot of legacy behind it. I think there's a lot of training that's been taught with the buffer. Certainly there are other things that are done within the buffer, and it's gotten way crazy for some screen readers more than others over the years. I like this idea. I don't know that it's going to change drastically unless Microsoft does it or other people do it, because I believe the future is still Microsoft web browsing of some kind, Chrome web browsing of some kind.
And even Microsoft conceded in Narrator. At first, they had it kind of like Safari, where you just would, you know, have keys to read parts of the web page and go next, previous, whatever. And now they turned on their, what are they calling it? Scan mode, I believe that's what they're calling it.
Scan mode, which would be modifier, caps lock, plus space on or
off. Which essentially locks the keys and, you know, is similar to the quick nav or, you know, whatever in other browsers. A virtual buffer, which is essentially what you end up with if you're bringing up browse mode on a web page. It's really changed over time. The problem used to be is that they didn't refresh, and that really held some screen readers back for a while, especially Window Eyes, but others as well, where they just did not refresh when there was new content, because, you know, a lot of web pages now will have refreshable content, content that is changing, and that's not necessarily all bad. That's actually a lot of good uses for that. And now they're a lot more dynamic. So the thing that we have to figure out is how do you deal with that and web apps? And, you know, maybe the solution is to just move some of your single letter keys like H or next heading to something else. That way you can actually have more keys for web apps, or having some sort of a system that says these are the keys that we'll reserve for screen readers and these are the keys that we'll reserve for web apps. And let's see if we can somehow keep them apart. Good luck with that.
Fascinating conversation when at the Google event today, they drew a picture with the Google Pencil around somebody's face and used facial recognition in real time, when Microsoft has talked a lot about digital touch in Microsoft Edge for real-time collaboration on documents like striking through and things like that. The nature of what we access, it's not just physical text anymore. And I think that's part of the issue, is that what we need to access is not what we used to access in the past. And so while I agree that the things that need to happen to change that need to catch up, I think, again, there's just so much legacy. And also, our community is very resistant to change. So unless you can get JAWS or others to really abandon or move forward and let go of legacy, I don't know how that happens. I mean, there are people right now who are freaking out about the changes in iOS 11, for good or bad, because it isn't what we used to use. We get used to that down arrow, and everybody gets hooked on that down arrow. And when you say, okay, I want to use table commands, what? No, I like using down arrow. And then we have a bit of a break in our community.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm an advanced web user, so I can use a lot of those commands. But most people, if you look at newer computer users, they're pretty much just using the arrows, or they're using the read all type commands. And that's about it. Yep. I mean, to learn more than 5 or 10.
It's all they want to know. In some cases, they're very task specific learners.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, that's why I still say sometimes that NVDA is an enthusiast screen reader. There are still some people that it would be difficult to transition to because of the type of user that they are. That's not to say that NVDA is bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that for some people, it's more powerful in the hands of those people than others. So definitely an interesting time we live in. That is for sure.
Okay. I'm going to stay away from that at the moment because we've had this argument before. I think you should use it a little more if you're going to make comments. So let's go whole bunch of
look at that. That was good. I didn't say me personally. Okay, good.
Let's there were a bunch of news. I'm trying to figure out, since you skipped past them, so let me skip back to them.
Okay. There, other news, my document didn't refresh.
Yeah, because you didn't refresh. It's okay. No, a lot of other bigger news this week. Hey, speaking of resistant to change, everyone has an iPhone. One of the reasons you might have not gone to Android is because of missing apps. Well, another one that's now on Android is the Be My Eyes app. So you can get your crowd-based assistance on Android. And okay, cool. I've tried it out. It works just fine. The interface is very similar. Where this really also opens up is, you know, even if only say 20% of your blind users are Android users, this also, remember, this app is used by the blind and sighted. So over 500,000 helpers are ready. Add now all the Android users around the world, and I could see that number hitting into the millions within the next year or so. So really interesting to follow that, and it's, they've been promising this for a long time and obviously working on a lot of things, and they claim they have ways to monetize. We'll have to see where that goes, eh? You know, the just a lot of cool stuff, though, with that company. It's a kind of a small company, and, you know, they're pretty much, I wouldn't say the opposite of Aira, but obviously they're on a much different approach with a free service, and then trying to see how far they can go with it or how they can monetize that, as opposed to trying to charge people for it.
Oh, so, and for people who don't have iOS available to them for Microsoft Seeing AI, or if you're outside the United States and not in one of the countries that has the ability to use Microsoft Seeing AI, then Be My Eyes is a great alternative, along with TapTapSee and others.
I love your comment. your Seeing AI comment.
Yes, from my Twitter feed recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so PlayStation, I'll have to put this in. Now I'm going to make a note to myself. PlayStation released their new 5.0 PlayStation software with better accessibility. And by better accessibility, I mean very little whatsoever was added to PlayStation to make it more accessible. One of the ways that they are using their form of accessibility is you hold the PlayStation button in. And if you hold it in for several seconds, that'll bring up the quick navigation menu, and all the accessibility changes seem to be happening in this menu and not in the regular menus of PlayStation, which is good for quick play type things. Like if you want to check your trophies and see if you've earned something, or see if your friends are online, or change the speaker volume on your controller, that's great. But any of the stuff that might involve the heavy lifting, like, you know, doing things to your system software, or to do updates for your themes, or like, those are still not supported by TTS. So I was using Microsoft Seeing AI to do the updates and make sure I was doing them correctly
for the Sony PlayStation 5.
Yes. Yes. So, wow. Which MSFT Accessibility liked that tweet. I thought that was really funny. It was kind of depressing. I like Sony PlayStation. I have lots of games for PlayStation, but my Xbox is by far and away a more accessible experience, especially if you're a parent looking to buy something for their kids this holiday. As I said with Michael Fear and BGFH a couple of weeks ago, and the Nintendo Switch is practically non-existent. They have things like you can go to high contrast mode, or you can change the fonts, but the accessibility that's involved with them is buy a cartridge and shove it in and click play until it starts. I mean, that's really about it as far as accessibility goes.
Now, what about
kind of depressing?
Now, the accessibility of your car, not something we've talked about much yet. I can see that in way before Blind Bargains Cast 1000. it's certainly going to be a topic.
Some people are saying 2020 is the year of the autonomous vehicle.
And one of the big things really that's going to be a big factor for us, as we've said before, is not necessarily the accessibility of the cars. It's the legislation in a lot of states that say you have to have a vision to have a driver's license. Well, there's a new act that is being introduced, or has been introduced, Congress, bipartisan, called the AV Start Act, or AV Start Act, Autonomous Vehicle, which at least is making some first steps there as far as saying, hey, you know, this people with disabilities need to have access to these vehicles. You can't have requirements in your, you know, licenses to say you can't, that blind people can't use these vehicles. So it's good that people are getting out in front of this. The both of our senators in Michigan, which I think is important to have them because, you know, being in the Motor City,
the car industry kind of was birthed there.
Exactly. You know? So definitely good to have them on there. Senator Stabenow and Senator Peters, but also Senator Blunt, who is a Republican, and Senator Thune. So, you know, some bipartisan support there. So we'll be following this one. They're just mentioning it, but it's pretty early on.
And a lot of the Google Waymo vehicles and a few others are actually still being submitted without steering wheels, which is freaking people out, right? Because the idea is that I can take over at any, you know, if this goes wrong and it becomes all maximum overdrive, I'll take over. And a lot of people believe that that is the worst way to approach autonomous vehicles, that you either trust the vehicle or you don't, because at some point that could cause more problems than it could help. So there's going to be some social mores. And as Jeff Bishop has often said, friend of the program, it's the insurance companies who will really impact us the most on how expensive
there's gonna
it will
be. I mean, look, this is
vehicles.
Early on. There's going to be, I mean, before it gets well, I mean, sorry to say, I mean, people are going to die in these things. There's going to be some bad things that are going to happen. There's going to be some crazy stories. But if you look back to the early history of the automobile or of the airplane or of many other things, you kind of have to break some things before you fix them sometimes. So it's going to be a lot to follow over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
And if you live in a major city, it's going to be amazing because you really won't own the vehicle. You'll do it like rideshare. You'll either buy into a plan like Era with minutes, you know, or number of rides. Because even the concept of purchasing vehicles and owning them for, you know, certain parts of the United States is going to go
away. Well, there's
a
reason why Uber and Lyft are huge into this as well. I mean, they're them along with many of the others. So, I mean, auto is going to be one of the fastest moving, you know, segments in industries over the next few years. And we'll see where it goes.
So some people could read about this on a magazine or maybe write a paper about it in the back of one of these self-driving vehicles while viewing it on Google Docs with magnification. See what I did there?
I was wondering how you were doing that, and I couldn't think of anything better.
Dropbox refresh, right. So now I'm caught up. Okay, so there we are.
If... how many of our listeners do you think are running the Chrome browser on a Mac? Okay, or perhaps maybe a few more running. There might even be more running Chrome on a Chromebook.
Single digits. Yeah, I'm gonna stay with single digits.
Okay, yeah, those are the
percentages.
Chrome, the Chrome browser on a Chromebook or a Mac. Those are the exact two methods that you could do this with currently. So we hope this expands.
I think it'd be easier if you asked me how many people are listening on an iPhone or an iDevice. Then I got a better number. I got the metrics over here.
We could look that up. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen, you know, hey, you know, we got to start somewhere. And obviously, it's easier to control the things that you can control, which is mostly the Chrome browser. I don't know why it's on the Mac and not Windows. It probably has to do something with current.
Education. That's a word that you will hear often me mention in the Google conversation coming up when we get to the Google event. But yes, education.
Well, So there you go. We'll link to that. And there's a couple other quick things to mention that we really don't know a lot about at this point, but we will try to scope them out. Or perhaps if you know anything, let us know. There's a new version of Roku was announced, version 8. Of course, yep. 7.5 had accessibility
supposedly
stuff.
Ugly as sin menus, as Rodney Edgar told me in direct message. Don't know about speech on it yet. Nope. Those will be shipping soon.
We assume it can't be any worse, but obviously it's going to depend on the channels or how they...
Nice if it was better, yes.
Yes, that agreed. Would be... I would definitely... there's a reason we really haven't done much reviewing of Roku, unfortunately. It's a little stuck at the moment, but maybe things have changed over the past year. And if you have one of these and you have different experiences, certainly do let us know. Same going with the updated Fire OS. And this is Fire OS 6 running Android 7. Got it?
Yeah, based on Nougat, which I think is interesting. Yeah. Amazon, prior to the Google event, announced a whole army of frickin' devices, whether it be more to the show / look, new Amazon Tap / Echoes. Basically, a whole bunch of Amazon stuff is rolling out, which is normal for Amazon. They periodically release new versions of their devices when they feel like it. They don't necessarily stick to the fall or spring schedule. They will update in flight. But some of that is going to be based off of Android, as you see here in this article over at blindbargains.com. So we were talking last week about Braille input with Shelley and how that has been changed. Looks like, as we've often said, whatever you hear on Amazon Echo will eventually show up on Google Home and Google Assistant and vice versa. This is even more proof that that is kind of sort of the same to give you an idea what framework they're working from.
So a lot of this news kind of intertwines Amazon, Google, Sonos, ? So, a lot of things to do with voice and assistant and new phones and new computers. We will talk about what happened at the Google event in just a minute or so. After I just remind you and tell you, the Aftershocks headsets, we've mentioned them for a while, from AT Guys, on sale. Hey, sale.
Yeah.
Always cool when things are on sale. So right now, $119.95 for your choice of blue or gray, or I believe we have a couple pink ones still, Joe. Pink?
There you go. Hey, holidays are coming up.
And there's also the Trex Titanium, which is the wireless Bluetooth. These, of course, are the headsets that don't cover your ears. There's also the Trex Titanium Mini. So if you ever tried one of these and the originals were just maybe a little too big for you, the Mini is just a couple inches shorter and also fits as well. There's a new wired version as well called the Sports Titanium. Those are half the price at $59.95. So lots of different options for you to wirelessly listen to sound. It goes great with your new iPhone 8 or your Google Pixel 2 that you might have coming very shortly. Of course, many other devices as well. Your Victor Stream, it would work with that as well, or the Polaris or anything that has Bluetooth, essentially, you can do with that. So if you want to learn more or pick up one or two or 10 of these, you can go to atguys.com. You can call us at 269-216-4798.
What about the big hit of the summer, the MicroSpeak?
Yes.
Back in stock?
Yep, we still have a fair amount of them. We are doing our best to keep them in stock because a lot of demand there as well. Of course, the Talking Digital Voice Recorder, and we've had a lot of success with that. We do appreciate your support, and you can check that out as well at AT Guys.
And I don't just say that because I know the lady's voice who's on that device. I'm not bringing that up at all.
Okay. Who was that again? Oh.
I know her, but I can't put my, seems familiar. Oh yeah, she's upstairs.
Oh, okay.
So,
play a sounder thing. Let's play a sounder so we can go to Google.
Is there a Google related sounder thing?
Maybe Patrick. I don't know. We'll see what, but let's go.
Okay. We'll see what happens. Okay, that works.
That was amazing, whatever that was.
That's cool. That was amazing. So was an event that was less than 2 hours. It was the Google event today. We're recording on the day of the event, in which they announced like 7 products all within...
I didn't even watch it. That's for the tweets, the live blogs and things. So maybe that's my new way to consume these things.
Yeah, a lot of it's on YouTube in case you do want to go through and just watch it completely on your own. CEO Pichar stepped in front of the microphone, which I don't know. He doesn't always feel super comfortable. He's like all chill and stuff. He's not like emotional the way that a Tim Cook gets, but stepped up to the microphone and talked about how the future of Google is AI first. In fact, that was a term that he used much during the conversation. In fact, machine learning, it was almost like a drinking game. You could have gotten really sauced if you had drank every time you heard the words machine learning during the presentation. But
it started at noon. You're drinking early.
It was noon for us, but it's 9 a.m. for California.
Pacific. Yeah, so, right.
Yeah. It was at the San Francisco Jazz Club or Jazz. It was like an auditorium.
I wasn't invited.
Which was kind of interesting. And the front row was full of cell phone reps. He singled them out. He was like, Verizon, T-Mobile, and other sales dudes were like in the front row, which was really weird because usually it's just, Apple employees like for the first three or four rows at an Apple thing. But he had made examples of what they were doing with the machine learning that they had learned. And he had talked about Google Maps and how Google Maps has changed over the years and how object recognition and object direction is affecting them and how they relate information in some cases in real time to be able to give you that kind of information about your commute, or in this case for autonomous vehicles to know about their commute. So a lot of was talked about with the power of Google and what they can do with the way that they approach the world through algorithm and artificial intelligence. Skynet and the Matrix notwithstanding, he then moved on to handing off the baton to talk about the Google Home Mini. That's right. Somebody could have just gotten up and read a Walmart ad because a lot of this stuff was leaked right before the event.
That's what seems to happen with these events now, right? Everything is leaked.
Yeah. The Home Mini was leaked like the day before. And so it was dead on. So we're looking at the middle of October at $49. And it looks like a donut without sprinkles. And
you can pre-order it now over from Google or from other places, and it has a lot of the things that your Echo Dot would have. It does not have a headphone jack, which
You're not going to see that on anything that's going to be mentioned here.
No, but this is one of a lot of people use the Amazon Echo Dot as a portable conduit to a speaker system. So Google took a little bit different
Rebecca
approach
Skipper
here.
And a couple other people said to us on Twitter and on email at feedback@blindbargains.com.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it's a little bit different approach. Yes, it's Chromecastable. But if you want to hook up to a stereo, you need to actually still get a Chromecast audio and do it that way. Now, some people have pointed out, this means I can have my Google Home Mini sitting out in the forefront to pick up the microphone, and then the Chromecast audio can be just kind of hidden or whatever behind. But sure. For many people, that is an extra piece of equipment that you have to buy. So it's an interesting omission, at least. I believe there's Bluetooth support, so you can do it that way. Of course, that lags things a bit. You can still play pause. You can do volume up and down, although it's not tracing the edge. It's you touch on the right side for volume up and touch on the left side for volume down. There's a microphone on-off switch. Looks like a donut, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, it looks kind of roundish like a donut because they said it would have 360 audio. We were talking about it here at the house. We're thinking about getting one to put in Kyle's room for once we toy with it and talk about it on the podcast, because we don't have one in that area. And we're thinking about when we got the cord, he could do a lot of that with a Chromecast. We'll just put another
Chromecast on his television. I know why
you want to do that,
though. Uh-huh. I've already seen it. Or this could backfire on you, though. There's this broadcast feature.
Oh, I love this feature. let's tell the people about what broadcast is. And it was directly mentioned about children and teenagers, so I like the example.
Are they going to abuse you, or are you going to abuse? pretty much, you can broadcast around the house on all your Google Homes. Can you do it from your phone,
your
to a home?
It's a Google Assistant, so you could actually do it around
Android TV, which now has Google Assistant, new Pixel Book, which we'll mention in a minute,
which would be the new Shield televisions too. So Android Shield, NVIDIA Shield,
you can kind of make an announcement, I guess, around the house, which could be
come to dinner, pull your head out of your laptop.
Why are you still sleeping?
Yes, all of that. I love this. We have a split level house, so that makes life much easier than yelling from one side of the home and then upstairs to the other. And it's better than doing iMessage or something like that. So I love this idea. So broadcast is a new feature that's coming to Google Home. They're also doing some things with the changes that you can make with being able to get a larger speaker. So you were just saying that you weren't necessarily, you know, compelled by the Mini. It's small. You know, why would you get that? You want something different? How about a big giant honking Google Home called the Max that sports two sets of speakers, woofer and tweeter, and looks to be rather large, even has magnets. Yay, magnets, where you could stick it different places. It is said to be 20 times louder than the Google Home, which is already pretty
than the regular home.
Loud, yeah, already.
Not the Mini. Yeah, so, of course,
so yeah, we'll
compare this to the HomePod, right?
$400. Yep.
HomePod and, 350.
Will come with a year of YouTube Red. So that would be YouTube ad-free and the YouTube Red service, not YouTube TV, as in you would cut the cord and
watch YouTube TV Red stuff. Gets you Google Play Music too. So you're getting a music service. You're getting $120 of music and video, you know, audio content, whatever, included in that. Like I said, $50 more than the HomePod, but of course, Google's understanding of what you're asking for is way better than where Siri is at the moment. And of course, you can play Spotify, free or paid, and of course, YouTube Red, and then assumably many of the other services as well. So
it can serve as a multi-room speaker, so it can actually act as a Chromecast audio.
You can buy two of these. Now we're at $798.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. So it's definitely a thing that some people wanted, which was a better sound coming out of one of these. They mentioned that there was going to be ambient sound recognition, so it would look to see what the room was like play quieter in the morning, or if you were had it in the kitchen and the dishwasher comes on, it would adjust itself if you let it.
The baby's crying, the sound. It'll suddenly get much louder and drown it would drown just turn out.
Louder and yes. Or you teach your you create a Google action to play lullabies from that one station. So there's the Mini and the Max. It wasn't exactly what some people were wanting, which, like you were saying, was a tap. I don't know that that's what Google wanted.
I don't think that, you know, and I think Rebecca wrote in about the tap, and the tap is, I think, was kind of a bit of a miss for Amazon. You know, there isn't a, I don't think there's as much demand for a speaker that you have to activate.
The portability part is cool.
But
is their phone?
If you want the portability, you do it on your phone, or you get the Vox or whatever that thing was that Scott reviewed a little while ago, and you can do it that way. But, you know,
there's even some powered speakers that could power a Chromecast audio. And so you would just stick it in, you know, the USB port, and then stick the 3.5 off the back of the Chromecast audio into the input of a speaker. No. So you could do it that way. So, I mean, there's DIY ways of doing
it. Then now there's a couple other things of note here. And one I'm going to mention because it's tangentially related. Sonos, who of course makes multi-room audio products and has been talking about adding voice control to their speakers for a while, is announcing a new Sonos One, not to be confused with the Play One.
$199,
which is the same price as the Play One, which will come out very soon with Alexa support built in, and next year sometime also Google Home support. So
Google Assistant.
Yeah. Yes, Google Home, Google Assistant, whatever you call it. Which theoretically, I guess you would switch between one or the other, but it'll be definitely one of the first devices that'll have both. And depending on how that's implemented, AirPlay
compatibility, I think, as well. So, I mean,
AirPlay 2. Yes, the new AirPlay.
AirPlay 2. I love that concept. That's great. I didn't know there were two AirPlays now. Okay, good.
Yeah. That was the one they announced. That was WWDC. Come on, keep up.
No, I can't. There's too much.
But, you know, so that I think becomes intriguing. $129, you know, if that were out, $129 for a regular Google Home or $199 for a Sonos One that could potentially do it all. Well, we'll see what happens there. So that there are some things to think about in that realm.
Some people are saying the new Sonos update works really well with VoiceOver. I don't know about TalkBack, but
well, and I know there's been improvements in the past on the Android app. So, I mean, yeah, the Sonos apps are pretty accessible. Last I played with them, I don't have any Sonoses here. Feel free to send them over, and we'll be happy to play with them.
But I know the apps are at least gardens that we can get to go into,
right? They're at least decent. And Sonos, as far as music service integration, Sonos has more than anybody. You know, you can do everything from
I think it comes down to what you like hearing, right? It's the same thing as AirPods. Some people are perfectly fine having 5 hours of battery life with a certain amount of, you know, sound range. And the same people feel that way about Sonos. Somebody who's into, you know, Martin Logan, BMW, some high-end, you know, speakers is going to just scoff at Sonos because that's
oh, God, yeah. Audio. And the Sonos one is going to be their low-end speaker. But, I mean, yeah. As at a speaker that also has a voice assistant, that's going to be tempting, but I digress.
Sure. But, I mean, that can be the one in the kitchen or that could be the one in the garage.
I mean, the Play 1 is a nice sound. I mean, it definitely is a much louder speaker than your Echo or your Google Home is currently. So,
yeah.
Well,
so different wallets, different ears, different needs for everybody. That is kind of the way I would approach, you know, the idea of having Pixel Buds. That seems like a good way to launch into these. We're mixing and matching here. Jay knows I usually like to go down through order.
And then I usually try to stop him. It seems like
Pixel Buds fits really well right here. He's really proud that I'm doing this. So
Pixel I was going to skip right over the Pixel Buds, but go ahead and mention them for a minute, sure.
no, not for $159. See, did you catch this? So we just said that the Max, the HomePod competitor, is $50 more than what Apple's bringing to the table. Well, a couple dollars more is the Pixel Buds, the 5-hour, tell me if you've heard this, 5-hour playtime, connects to Google Pixel, comes in a charging case. Why are they
not Pixel Pods?
That would have been great.
I like some of the control, though. I mean, so you can tap them to play and pause. You can swipe them to do volume, and you can tap and hold to do Google Assistant.
Right ear has a little touchpad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Works with Pixel to do some things, but also will work on other devices because they are Bluetooth and they are Bluetooth 5 compatible.
Oh.
So there are definitely...
aren't many Bluetooth 5 compatible things yet. There were phones that have been Bluetooth 5 since the Galaxy S8 and now the iPhone 8, but Bluetooth 5...
None of these are wireless charging. Nothing that we're going to mention today is wireless charging, which I think is interesting. Nor will they have headphone jacks. So there's that.
That is true.
That would include the Pixel 2.
That's and right. The Pixel 2.
Pixel 2 is available.
Is it the Plus or the XL? I get these mixed up.
So there's the Pixel 2 and the Pixel XL that would be 5-inch and 6-inch units, respectively, as far as bezels are concerned. They're kind of minimal. They're sporting several colors depending on the version that you want and carrier that you're interested in. Colors were shown was kind of blue. That's actually the name, kind of blue. The white and black. So there were black and white phones and the blue phone. Some of them sported a really bright orange or coral button for the power button because they think it just looks visually striking. Some other people thought it looked like a sore thumb sticking on the side of the phone. Just depends. 12 megapixel camera on the back.
One camera,
not a two camera, right? Not that. Stereo speakers, OLED screen. High dynamic range, blah, blah,
nice
blah,
bunch of numbers speakers, and letters. Apparently. Pretty big speakers. USB-C charging, which...
64 and 128.
No, 256. Where's the store? Now, pricing, you're similar to the iPhone 8 as far as pricing, right? $650.
Welcome to the world of premium phones, kids.
Yep, but that's where these have been. I mean, if you're looking for the premium phones, you're either going to go with iPhone 8, you're going to go with Pixel, or you're going to go with Galaxy Note or Galaxy S. There's a couple others out there, but those are the three that really you're looking at. If you're not going premium, I would go towards the Motorola's and those type of things. And, you know, there are options out there. One of the reasons you might choose to go Pixel versus a cheaper Android, if you're going to go the Android route, is they are now guaranteeing you 3 years of Android updates, which... in the Android world, it's a big deal.
18 months. We're growing.
Yeah, I think they said double. 2 last year, and now it got bumped to 3. So that is a big deal. Yep. So that gets you through like Android Reese's.
Whatever. Yep. Yes, I like that. I can only hope. Mm. Oh man, there's definitely that, as well as the fact that if you do get a Pixel, you know, you go ahead and plunk that money down, you're going to get a free Google Mini. So there's a $50 throw-in for you. So that's definitely there. The minis are available in different colors as well.
And there are already plans out there. T-Mobile's already, of course, throwing around, you know, a crazy offer to get you, just like they did with the iPhone 8. So if you're looking...
Got an email this morning from Verizon. So they're all excited about it, which is great because unlocked ones are going to be more expensive, of course.
So the Pixel 2, again, and versus the others... Here we go again with the discussion of, is it worth the upgrade or is it the same thing as the iPhone 8, where a lot of people are saying, you know what, phones are slowing down now. Do I need to get a new one every year?
Well, if you want Oreo, you know you're going to get it on the Pixel, because it's going to ship with a Wario. So if Android version matters matter to you, then this might be a consideration. If not, you can get the Oreo update on an original Pixel, which is available for $549 on the Google Play Store. That actually was updated after the event had happened. So if you're okay with quote unquote last year's model, shrug, then you can get an original Pixel and have Oreo. And for some people who are having to do this professionally for testing, what have you, that might be the consideration, or they go for one of the others like the Motorola you were talking
about. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing.
The trade-in is easier, or the loss on 300 is better to swallow than 600.
Well, right. I mean, again, so I'm 18 months out. In my situation, I have the Galaxy S7, which was spring of 2016, we will assume we get an Oreo update at some point, and that may be what we'll get, the last one, probably.
Probably.
But I still don't feel compelled to upgrade at this point. There's a couple of things that might make me think about it at some point. Bluetooth 5, as more accessories come out and I can listen to audio at longer ranges, that's going to be
Pixel Buds, because you want that real-time translation.
No. I'm good. I don't need the Pixel Buds, but we'll get some Bluetooth accessories that'll work, and probably a speaker or something. That's one. Okay. All right. You know, and so, some of the battery life and things like that, you know, the better cameras. But, you know, I'm becoming a little more passe too. And you know what? This phone is still working for me just fine. You know, why do I need another phone? If I don't buy another phone by the end of the year or beginning of next year, my payment will go down to about $25 a month. You know, it's kind of like, you know, having the 6-year-old car and then, hey, the payments are done. Let's actually enjoy a couple of years of having no car payment, you know? So,
yeah. Well, and this debate comes up all the time between, you know, Apple owners and Android owners. The need to have the latest and the greatest is not as put upon by Android users than it is iPhone users, who usually feel like, oh God, I got to have the new shiny. An older version of Android is not a death sentence, where for some users, it can start to feel very uncomfortable if they're on a 3 or 4 year old iPhone with modern software. So there are some differences. It's hard to compare quote unquote apples to Oreos if you need to. So there is a desire for some of us out there to go ahead and do that. Those who are bleeding edgers or those who are cutting edgers. And certainly it doesn't hurt to have the newest phone, but you don't need a screaming chip.
No. And this was the one I was waiting for.
To make Android just sing.
And this was the one I was going to. I said before, if there was a phone I was going to get this fall, it would be the new Pixel. And there's nothing, you know, I would actually be losing wireless charging, which is kind of funny. I've never really even thought about wireless charging. Of course, now when they added on the iPhone, now it's like, oh, this doesn't have wireless charging, you know, of course, which is, you know, fine. I've never
used it. But you do get a fingerprint sensor, and they did mention that.
I have that now.
Which I thought was weird. They didn't do it as a dig either. They just mentioned that the fingerprint sensor.
No, they did some other digs. Like, well, you don't have to get the Plus model to get all of our advanced features.
Yeah, all the features are on both. And I'm not wild about the squeeze feature that was mentioned, so you can squeeze your phone to take a selfie or interact with your device, which I don't know. That's certainly not as bad as the loss of the home button on the iPhone X, but it's not, again, a compelling feature that makes me go, oh darn, I wish I hadn't just done my free upgrade with Verizon. No, I agree with you. I think it's a nice evolution. There are some who are saying that it was HTC that did the 5-inch phone and LG that did the 6-inch phone. I haven't verified that. I haven't read articles that verified that for sure. But there, for me, the only thing that jumps out is stereo speakers, because that really has become the thing in a phone that I just won't consider it if it doesn't have it, because I've really grown attached to that on phones. Kind of for what Rebecca was alluding to with the Amazon Tap. I like it because the speakers, for low-level situations, the audio is fine for doing music and stuff at my desk rather than having to do, you know, a tap or something like that. I don't know. It's certainly a good step up. It's planting a flag in the sand and telling people what Google has in mind for their hardware division now that they're starting to ramp that up. And nothing could be more seen in that direction than $1,000 Pixelbook. This is the new Chromebook/tablet hybrid that Google also showed. Starts at $900 and works its way up to $1,799, Jay, for an i7 with 16 gig of RAM and a 512 SSD, why would you need 512 gig on a Chromebook unless you can run Windows? Oh, that'd be awesome. Then you could
Chromebook
have a real
Chromebook is all... Am I missing the point? Because awesome. To me, there's the E word again, Chromebook education, which puts it in the great for the $199 computers. But man, if I'm spending $1,700 on a computer, I'm getting a Windows or a MacBook. Am I missing a point here?
Well, is it that they have to do what Microsoft and Apple are doing, right? They're making premium experiences and saying, this is what we think is best for our software paired with this hardware we designed. So in that respect, Google isn't doing anything different that the other majors aren't doing. Well, except Amazon. I mean, Amazon's like, hey, how cheap can we make this to shove it in your house? You know, that's kind of Amazon's philosophy, is to give you as much stuff at super cheap prices so you put it in your house so they can look at you with their cameras and you can hit their dash buttons and buy. That's Amazon's philosophy, is loss leader, you know, putting CDs at the front of Best Buy kind of thing. So it's a different kind of philosophy for Amazon. But for Apple, Microsoft, they are very happy to give you a much bigger bang for the buck, quote unquote, with their service and supply, and let HP, Samsung, Asus and others have the cheap Chromebook market, you know, and that seems to be okay. And Apple doesn't have to worry about other suppliers and other people. Apple just has to worry about Apple. Microsoft and Google both have third-party partners that they don't really want to keep around, but they also don't want to get rid of either.
You know, and I guess the thing about the Chromebook, I mean, if you do at least get updates for a long time, they guarantee you at least 5 years of updates on Chromebooks, which is a thing that you don't necessarily get everywhere else. And so that's something to think about. Yeah, you get decent updates with Windows and Mac, especially on the Mac side as well. But you don't have that. I pulled up my old Chrome box. Remember that thing? Got like in 2012 and it updated to Chrome 60. You know, it just took a few seconds and it popped back up. I hadn't used it in like in 3 or 4 years and it remembered me. So there's that at least. And no, I think I'm going to sell it. But if anybody wants to buy one.
The minute they showed the Google Home Mini, I thought, hey, there's a companion for your Nexus Q. You could literally sit it on top of the
Nice.
I haven't seen a round thing from Google. So I think, again, that there were certain things that Google shows that they do extremely, extremely well. And the real-time translation demo, which we have a link here in the show notes, where they were speaking different languages and Google Translate was speaking that language to the other person in their native language with pixels and the little pixel buds. That would be amazing next time we go to CSUN, right? To have someone speaking and not having to worry about translators at CSUN, and they could talk in their native language and then you could sit there and hear it in English. That's crazy to think about what we have. That's the Babelfish. That's the universal translator from Star Trek. That's where Google exceeds. And that gets back to what Sundar was saying at the beginning of the event, was they're leveraging the power and the information that they have with the ability to do things like, they made sure that they mentioned that this camera that they're offering, which another one of those crazy, why is Google doing that moments? They're offering a standalone Pixel camera for $250, but they made sure to tell you that it too was using machine learning. It too would learn your family's faces and the like, and it would not upload that data unless you told it to. So they were kind of acknowledging the big issue that people have with Google, which is the privacy and the ethics and all of that, and saying, no, we can do this. Here's a standalone camera where, that stuff's right there. And then they went on to talk about Google Lens.
Right.
They took a moment to talk about this thing that's worked around, which you and I have known as Google Goggles, and it's been called different things at different times. It was a part of Google Now Search. Well, Google Lens is kind of their autonomous vehicle type information, which gives you all of this information in real time with object recognition.
It has a lot of potential.
And will eventually work into navigation for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty limited at the moment. I mean, there's probably some similarities between that and seeing AI as far as it recognizing objects and identifying them and figuring out what to do with them, et cetera, et cetera. But right now you can point in it at books and it will recognize, that's nothing too new because a lot of it's been done before, but it will recognize a lot of objects and it's certainly a jumping off point for potential. And as Google and Microsoft and others especially get more into this object recognition, figure out what can we do with it, yes, it benefits us tremendously because they can do a lot with accessibility. And of course, it benefits them as well as they recognize objects. They recognize things in your house or that you're saying, like, oh, we see you have this brand or we see you have this item. You should get this item to go along with it. So obviously, it's not just accessibility. There's a lot of...
I think that the Google buyer is into the buying on potential, right? Certainly when we bought our Google Homes last year when they first came out, we knew it was going to be bigger and better. We were buying into that potential. When we bought Chromecast, the same way, right? And I don't regret having Google Play Music. I don't regret having my home. My Google Homes have been fantastic. It's done what I've asked it to do in the way that I thought it would. And I've been happy when all those things that they showed at Google I.O. 2015 have come to pass. In 2016 have come to pass. So the things that they promised on, to me, they've fulfilled. It's a little different when Apple says the future is now, you're going to pre-order on October 27th. Right. It's for Apple, the needs and wants factor is a shorter cycle where if you're an Android user, you're used to things coming in a little slower or Gmail was in perpetual beta. That's kind of the way it works. So I think you kind of buy into that. And if you're already drinking the Kool-Aid for whatever company you like, or have decided to go with, then you're willing to stay on that reservation regardless. Will it attract new noses into the tent? That's hard to say, right? They made sure mentioned that there were 55 million Chromecasts out there.
That's not a lot.
That's still a staggering that's a staggering number, but it's certainly
lots of people have multiple. I mean, 30
million on Apple Music versus 130 something on Spotify. So there are
numbers are numbers, though. I mean, okay, the number of Chromecast, just to pick on that example, since they threw it out there. Sure. I mean, people that are really invested in that ecosystem. Okay, I have purchased three or four different Chromecast devices, and I'm sure there are people that have purchased many more. So Chromecast is a device that a lot of people will purchase in multiples, and they will set up their own home. So
correct,
that becomes 55 million is a good start.
And they work.
I would compare that to Alexa-enabled devices. I don't know, but you know, it's certainly. I think Chromecast is one of the more underrated services for media platforms, as far as an easy way to get music or video around your house. And it's. I think a lot of iPhone users, especially, kind of dismiss it and like, oh, I could just use AirPlay. But Chromecast really does a lot of unique and cool things. And, you know, especially
just being able to use iOS with it, which is what I do.
And you can
cast off iOS onto it.
You can cast a movie and then leave. You know, that's the thing. You don't have to be in the house.
Well, and like I was telling Shelley last week, I could play something from YouTube or Google Play Music and pause it from my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, Google likes having data and the platforms that will feed it data. Google just got back search on High Sierra from Microsoft because Microsoft had Bing as one of the default search engines on Apple products until recently. So Apple and Google are kind of sort of talking again. Hi, Google Home.
Yep. So that happens at least once in every episode, it seems now.
I don't understand. Yeah. So again, it's like we were talking about with Shelley last week. If you are happy behind your walled garden, the more pieces you add are just another brick in the wall, right? It's just making you happy. You get more out of it. More things are going to come to you because you're in that wall. If you are so far deep in that wall and you want to change, let's say you bought all your media through iTunes, that's a painful, painful attempt to scale that wall.
Don't do it.
If you have Amazon Music and Amazon Video or Google Play Music and Google Play Video, you can actually jump back and forth. You can actually move a little
this
easier.
This is why I don't buy media through iTunes. I'd rather buy media.
Or you live in Spotify. You can live on any of those things, including Sonos.
I mean, I'd rather have give me an MP3, because then I don't care. If you bought stuff through Groove Music, which is Microsoft service, well, it's going away now. So, and then iTunes is not going away. But still, I mean, it's... You gotta own, as there's more digital content out there, you kind of have to own your content and have copies of it just in case these types of things happen. But again, I digress. Lots more to digest.
All of this stuff is shipping this fall. None of it you can really
run out. A lot of things that were announced are pre-ordered now, so that's good. So you don't have to, you know, wait 2 months or 6 months for a lot of this stuff. So
some people are reporting online that their Pixels won't arrive until December, which is kind of right. So you might want to check with your carrier or Best Buy.
Or maybe check your local store. Sometimes if it's sold out on Google site, you can get it through a Best Buy or through, you know, your carrier or things
That's usually how I get most of my Google stuffs that are not phones. So the minis and is like October 18th. Homes for Macs are later than that, like closer towards Thanksgiving. The Daydream VR, which we didn't even discuss, they came out with an updated version of Daydream VR for $99. For those of you who are into VR, there's another option out there. That's going to be shipping towards the end of the month / early November as well. The Pixelbook, that also is going to be shipping out a little bit later. Definitely take a look at that. There's some interesting hands-on talks about the key feel, soft keys, backlit. Certainly only comes in one screen size, so that may work for some people who are wanting to use it like a Surface or a Surface Book. Also, the AirPod competitor. Oh, God, I'm going to do that terminology.
Pixel Pods. Not justice. No, Pixel Buds.
Pixel Pods are going to be available in November around the same time as the launch of the Pixel 2 phones. So that gives you an idea. There wasn't anything in this list that I had to have other than I'll probably get a Google Home Mini. And I want to hear the Macs. I want to put my hands on a Macs.
I would like to compare that in a HomePod. I don't think I'd buy a HomePod because of it's using Siri.
I don't want to spend 400 bones on anything that isn't an Xbox at this point.
Well, like and you know, that Sonos thing will be interesting as well. So we'll definitely see.
We'll see what's going on.
Yeah, a lot more expanding of the multi-room audio and all those type of things. So
you can read so much more about this and things we didn't even talk about. As you know, we put a lot more stuff in the show notes for expanded reading. So if you have an opportunity and you want to know more about any of these products, head on over there. It's a myriad of sites that I chose this time. So it's not Ars Technica. There's all sorts of places. And I usually do that where there's Engadget or Gizmodo or Android Police or different places. So that way you get varying viewpoints from varying people about what they thought about the particular information that you heard. So we stalled. Do you have a tip? Do we have an idea?
I do. Really? Let me set this up here. There we go. I'm doing some fancy technical stuff so I can add the audio in later there. I know. So... what I'm just a very simple, quick tip, not Google related, not Apple related at all. Microsoft Office 2016. Great for some things, and then sometimes it lags. You ever bring up like a long document, 40 page, whatever, and it's just dragging.
Especially on a widescreen monitor when it does that double column thing.
Yeah, it's just dragging. You try to arrow down through and whatever. It's not new to Office 16, but you know, it definitely seems to happen here as well. But there's one way that you can, you probably know this, that you can often get around this. If I bring up a large document in Office, one of the first things I will do is I will change the viewing mode. Well, how you do that? It's now Alt W because, of course, they move these things around.
Oh, sure.
Right. There's the View tab. Now, if you tab through, there's different modes. There's layout, web layout, or outline. If you go to Draft, Draft is essentially the text only version. So, to a screen reader user, it's a lot. You know, they kill all the crap essentially. So when you're arrowing through things, your screen reader is not going to trip up about as much stuff. And it makes it a lot faster for browsing. I can't speak. Now, what does it do? Have you tried that for magnification? Does that mess things up?
Now, for screen magnification, it can be very helpful because by default, if you have a high-end computer or even widescreen monitors in general, Word likes to show you that double page view all at once. And for most screen magnifiers with speech, that kills speech. It can be a big pain in the butt, and you have to usually end up using visual methods in order to read something. So this tip that you're mentioning here can help very much, or at least allow you to get back to the single page or print view, so that way you're not seeing two pages at the same time. Now, this is different than, say, holding control and using your scroll wheel, because while that too will change the way that it looks visually, it doesn't always affect the off-screen model, and so speech doesn't necessarily translate very well. So the tip that Jay is recommending is probably still better if you rely on screen magnification with speech.
And I also noticed that these doesn't always seem to stick. Whenever I reload the document, sometimes it tries to bring it back to print view or web layout. So if you're reopening the same document, it's still lagging again. Yeah, go back to Draft or Outline or one of those.
So here's a disgusting way to look at it. If you use OneDrive, sometimes saving it in OneDrive, yuck. I know some people use other services like Dropbox and the like, but saving the state will sometimes work a little better in OneDrive, I've found, but that varies depending on your version of Windows, and it varies depending on how Office 2016 is working. But if you tend to save in one page, it will sort of remember it. There used to be a way, and maybe somebody could send it in at feedback@blindbargains.com, a way to make sure that it opens in that default. So it's a open up in a single page.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But I've not found that recently in latest Office 2016.
And that brings us to...
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback@blindbargains.com. Or tweet us @blindbargains.
Yeah, that. Sound off. Do we have any?
Yeah. Thank you, Kiffany. That's great. So, a couple of things we had mentioned when Rebecca Skipper had written in and given us her thoughts about that Google event just recently. And then we also had from Charlie Smith, and he wrote in, he's currently testing that project manager software that you were mentioning just a couple of episodes ago, and said that it worked really, really fine. What is it? Asana. There we go. He said that it was working just fine. And he said all the buttons were labeled well, and he really enjoyed using it. So that was cool. It was good to hear that from other people who are already playing with it.
I'm seeing a lot more accessibility on the app versus the web at the moment. Hopefully they can work on the web side of that as well. And maybe if you're finding out different, let me know. Maybe I just haven't been using it correctly. They're active. The Asana developers were active on AppleVis, and I believe they had a forum topic. So you certainly can send them feedback that way, among others. I just saw a YouTube video about someone using, I believe it was their Mac, to add a user on Trello, which is pretty much a competitor to Asana. So that's one I played with a couple of years ago, and maybe it's gotten a lot more accessible. We'll have to try to double back on that one and see where that's gone. So it's good to see more of the like I said before, the you know, company facing or the non front facing apps. Because if you're going to take a job, in many cases these days, you need to be able to use these apps. The Word and all that is good, but you need to be able to communicate with your team.
Oh, man, it's a good question to ask. Do you have any questions? Yes. What are the tools that you use every day? I'm very curious. Blah, blah, blah. Whenever you get to that point in the resume / interviewing process and they ask you, do you have any questions? Well, now you have one to ask, because it'll let you come home and start playing with that stuff and know pretty quickly if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing if you get accepted for that position. Jim writes in and says he really enjoyed the iOS 11 show.
Oh. Okay.
You need to refresh your Dropbox. Sorry. Wait. There we go.
Well, if we were using Google Docs, Jim writes in
and says that he's having problems with now it has magnification. We're doing great.
On the Mac with Chrome.
Okay. I just updated the Mac to High Sierra. We should be good. Jim writes in. Yeah, and talks about iOS 11, and he appreciated our shows on iOS 11, says that there's still some problems with importing some things into iBooks and the like with EPUB, and that there's still some horrible jumping around buggy things. As we are talking to you at the recording, 11.02 just dropped. 11.01 did fix a couple of the Braille issues, but AppleVis notes that there are still some issues that are still glaring, certainly the ones that people don't like about
But the PDF Apple Mail issues
and some others.
PDF issues are big for anyone who's using those, and sounds like I don't
manuals
know if any of that stuff has been fixed yet. Of course, you could get VoiceStream, but you shouldn't have to pay for a product just to fix a bug.
Sure.
And he says, set for my J-phone.
Yes, I saw that. That was kind of neat that he edited that. 11.02 is out, so maybe that might be something to look into. I don't think there will be any major changes. Also reading some people are saying that not a lot of the changes that Scott and Shelley have talked about in the past are changed in 11.1. So that's kind of heartening and disheartening at the same time.
We'll see what happens there. I mean, there's been discussions, especially about the rotor action in Mail and how it deletes messages. Is it a bug? Is it a feature? And
Rotor never works. It has not worked well in the last
and it's two a bug. If it doesn't, if it consistently worked the new way, then that would be one thing. But it seems to be a little inconsistent, which is obviously a problem. So,
and there was an interesting blog post about how the iPhone could be your only accessible tool, and I was really kind of not down with that, because I don't believe in having any platform as your one and true only way to do something. That is just asking all your eggs to be crushed in one basket. And I think we've seen over the last couple of years, people who are just devastated when they lose their form of access through merger, through purchase, through changes through loss of headphone jack, that it can be really devastating to that individual. And like we said at the top of the show, there are some people who don't do well with change. They become task-specific users, and they can only learn one type or one way. That's why when I was with the Division for Blind Services, I was always kind of reticent about people buying Macs and throwing Windows on it, because 90% of the time they ended up staying on Windows and still fighting the keyboard conflicts. So it sounds good in theory, but you have to think about what the practice might be. So it's a very interesting time. We'll have to see what happens. Jim, good email. Thanks for sending that on in. And now to the last word. Yes, I am torturing you with Taylor Swift. I thought this was kind of interesting. More than a two dozen episodes back, we had a Disturbed version of Bad Blood. And somebody was really quick to add this new version of Taylor's new hit.
See, this, I think, blows up the theory of you can make any bad mm-hmm. song better with a cover song, a cover version.
No.
Talent? Sure.
Sure.
Talent? Yes. But was it necessary?
Now, for some people, they've turned it into a career, like the one about Red Hot Chili Peppers with mm-hmm. all the different versions of Give It Away. That guy released a record this week.
Oh, yeah. The 10-second songs stuff is pretty. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
There's some creativity.
22 styles.
Yeah. But it's amazing, though, the number of people that are doing... You can pretty much get a cover of any current hit in like a metal cover. You want the violin cover. You want the toddler tunes cover. You want the smooth jazz cover. You want the piano cover. You know, and some are well done, and a lot of them are just done. So, you know.
But see, it's better when it's a band that does it on purpose. Like, did you ever hear of Dread Zeppelin?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Dread Zeppelin is a ska band that plays Led Zeppelin songs with an Elvis impersonator as the lead singer. So, that's Dread Zeppelin, who I actually saw live ages ago. I'd actually forgotten that I'd seen them live. But some bands do that really, really well, and it's their shtick, right? That's their whole existence, is doing a cover band. Ricky always mentions The Darkness, which was kind of a glam metal, you know, band that had original songs. Some people could do that really, really well. And others, it's just a way to get clicks, right?
So, yeah, I guess so.
It's interesting. It's not your normal audio mashup kind of thing, but there you go.
All the segues I could make here would just be really weird, and I'm not going to.
Okay.
Have you broken any Guinness records that you're aware of?
Not that I am aware of. Not that I was actively trying to. Did you lift an umbrella a couple of years ago in Orlando? Were you?
Yeah, and then that record was broken again after.
Yeah.
Well,
the National Federation of the Blind Convention actually held briefly the number of simultaneous umbrellas. What was it?
Exactly. Yeah, and then apparently the record got broken a few months later. So this is, I guess you couldn't break this record because it involves dogs, but...
Like dogs more than cats.
Yeah. Well, there you go. 7.3 inches.
Dog?
No. It's
hot dog?
No. The world's longest
corn dog with a stick.
It's a Saint Bernard. It's the world's longest dog tongue. 7.3 inches. I guess they got it from a shelter. And first of all, I guess you have to see the dog tongue to see how long it is, and then somehow. Is that a job that anybody would want to have, measuring dog tongues? I mean, I don't know if anyone's been going around and doing this, but you want that job? Someone at Guinness had to come in and do this, right?
Is it Gene Simmons who's doing it for comparison? Because
right.
Gene Simmons has a very long tongue, lead singer of Kiss. I guess that reminds me of You Don't Know Jack question. We actually were using You Don't Know Jack the other day with our iPhones and the Xbox. And when the question was about how long is a giraffe's tongue, which is around 18 to 20 inches. So,
oh, that's again, funny. We had the same question when we played it.
Oh, did you? Oh, wow, that's
great. I got it right, too.
We used Fibbage, too. Mm-hmm. And VoiceOver will read Fibbage okay, not great. But yeah, that was really kind Fibbage of cool. We had told the teenager that we could do it, and now we have family game night, which is awesome.
Oh, God, yeah, that's a lot of fun.
So I don't know that it's a skill that many people look for or want to happen. Although I can say that it probably makes giving treats much easier. And he doesn't have to bend his head down too far to get the water out of the water bowl.
Sticks so the tongue way right down.
It acts like a straw. Just
the right on up. The article that I sent you that may or may not make it in the show notes, depending on if you put it show in. Notes, it has yes. Shows a video of the lady. She's talking about the dog and all that, and I'm sure you can see it in the
now
video.
Now I wonder if people at like Seeing Eye and Guiding Eye and all the others like do they measure tongues?
I'm sure if it was one that long, they would note. They would take notice. You know, I'm sure.
True. Gonna, yeah, that's true. And does that change the name of the dog?
That's
the litter?
An amazing PR opportunity for a guide dog school.
Tongue to tail.
Okay. Yeah, that's gonna do it, folks. Only something at the end there.
Absolutely.
Yep, there you go. Thank you so much for listening. Episode 117 of the Blind Bargains cast. We do appreciate it. Got some more things coming up. I've played with YouTube TV. I've recorded a demo of that. So that'll be coming up soon. Perhaps some interviews that may or may not happen. Well, you know, I don't like promising things unless they're already recorded.
Nor are there Apple things. Then you know that it's going to happen because it's Apple, right?
Exactly. Okay. But we do appreciate you listening. And hey, we'd love some listener content. We haven't had as much lately, but feel free to send us your pitches, your reviews, your tips. If you need help figuring out how to do that in audio form, just tweet us at Blind Bargains or email feedback@blindbargains.com. We can give you some guidance on the best way to record such things so they will sound good and be easy for us to process. But we're always happy to take.
You mean like Rich Cavallaro's demo of a certain product he sold?
Oh, yeah. He sold his Orbit. Yeah,
called that it. Was quick and fast, called man. Man, like I was wondering who had the over and under on 3 months. Rich, we love you, man. We're just picking on you, but
he sold it right away too.
Did sell
to
quick
right on the Blind Bargains so classifieds. You can sell things too very quickly on the Blind Bargains classifieds.
So if you're kicking yourself that you missed a chance of getting an Orbit reader even cheaper than it already is, this is why you got to follow us on Blind Bargains on the Twitter app, because that thing went up and down pretty quickly. Also, while you're on Twitter, hey, give me a read. I'm at Ranger State. All one word. You can see a lot of the show notes before they actually become show notes by hanging around in my feed and also learning a little bit about science fiction. I'm talking a little bit about Star Trek Discovery these days. Oh my God, Star Trek Discovery. The CBS All Access app is crap. Just crap. It's better on iOS than it is tvOS. And here's one for you, Jay. Star Trek Discovery has audio description, but not in America. If you have Netflix, you get audio description for a television series made here in America. Go figure. That's
I've never watched Star Trek in my life, so I guess I will never have to have that.
Well, and that's why I tell you about it, because I understand. It's okay. One day. Maybe Marvel movies. Maybe we can get you into superheroes again.
No.
Justice League this fall.
I'll stick with Shark Tank and Pawn Stars and Family Feud. Simple.
Pop Star Never Stopping.
Yeah, I need to watch that.
That's a good movie. That's very funny.
We got to go.
So you can follow us there. And also, you can keep it here as we'll talk about more stuff. Remember, we've got the Microsoft event coming up towards the end of the month, and certainly more stuff to talk about with Google. Thank you, Mr. Patrick Perdue, for making us sound much better than we actually are. And those of us who met us in person actually know that.
Thank you so much for listening, folks. And that's going to do it. We will see you next time.
Later.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2017.